Welcome to this week's medical industry feature, sponsored by Cooper Surgical's Endosy Office Hysteroscopy System, a new and better standard of care than blind biopsy for the diagnosis of AUB.
We can all agree that diagnosis at the point of care is beneficial to both patient and clinician. What is the standard of care for the diagnosis of abnormal uterine bleeding? And what diagnostic tools are available to clinicians? I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Singer, and with me today is Dr. Stephen R. Goldstein, Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at New York University School of Medicine, immediate past president of the American Institute of Ultrasound and Medicine, and a busy clinical practitioner in the faculty practice suites at New York University. Dr. Goldstein, welcome to ReachMD.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So glad you've been able to join us. Dr. Goldstein, you're well published in the field of abnormal uterine bleeding, and especially on the use of transvaginal ultrasound and saline infusion sonohysterography for the evaluation of the uterine cavity. There have been some recent advances in technology that should significantly change the way physicians are evaluating patients with abnormal uterine bleeding. Can you please share some background and insights for our listeners?
I think people need to realize just how important abnormal uterine bleeding is in terms of our patient's health. One-third of patient visits to the gynecologist are for abnormal bleeding. It's said to account for more than 70% of gynecologic consults in perimenopausal and postmenopausal women. In younger women between 19 and 39, abnormal bleeding most frequently occurs as a result of pregnancy or benign structural lesions like polyps or myomas. Certainly, anovulatory cycles in younger women, polycystic ovarian syndrome, abnormalities of hormonal contraception, and occasionally even the patient with endometrial hyperplasia. Endometrial cancer is certainly less common in that age group of under 40, but can occur. It's in the women between 40 to menopause that abnormal uterine bleeding becomes much more of a big issue. And it often is due to anovulatory bleeding, which is a normal physiologic response to declining ovarian function. In a paper we published more than a decade ago in over 400 women between 35 and menopause, 79% of the time after the workup, the cause of the bleeding turned out to be dysfunctional anovulatory bleeding, or what some doctors will refer to as hormone imbalance. But the other 20% of people have some sort of structural abnormality, polyps, fibroids, endometrial hyperplasias, occasionally endometrial carcinoma, and sometimes in postmenopausal women, the bleeding can be from endometrial atrophy. Many of your listeners are aware of the fact that for more than 20 years, I've really used transvaginal ultrasound and saline infusion sonohysterography as the basis for triage of patients with abnormal uterine bleeding in order to distinguish this anatomic pathology in about 20% from the dysfunctional anovulatory bleeding in the other roughly 80%. So for me, this has been a point-of-care option, and that word gets bantered around a lot, but that means something I can do at the time of the patient visit with the patient up in stirrups by myself, saving them time and making it very efficient. I have to admit that I have been, though, disappointed, however, that the majority of gynecologists who are utilizing this approach often are doing it as a separate procedure, requiring another visit in a separate special treatment room with an ultrasound technician, and this defeats much of what I believe is one of the main advantages of my approach, which is that of a point-of-care option done at the time of the patient visit. In addition, I personally have not gotten into office hysteroscopy because of the space needed for the equipment, the need to be able to sterilize the equipment, the time involved, as well as patient level of comfort or discomfort. Thus, in my hands, it has not been a satisfactory option, and it is definitely not something that I consider point of care. This Endosy device, while technically still a form of office hysteroscopy, is truly revolutionary because it is absolutely a point of care option. I mean, it can and should be done with a patient up in stirrups, just as one used to do a pipel endometrial biopsy. It's really not much different or more difficult than doing an endometrial biopsy. It requires no real preparation, no special room, and this Endosy is really almost as quick as an endometrial biopsy.
Well, you have just given us a wealth of information, of very important information, regarding the significance of abnormal uterine bleeding and some of the issues in terms of the approach to evaluation. And you just mentioned endometrial biopsy, which has really been the standard approach for the evaluation of AUB. Can you share some of that history with us?
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, if you were to put the word PIPEL into PubMed, the first article that shows up is by Cornier. In the mid-1980s, he described this device, and he intended to use it to do endometrial dating as part of an infertility workup, something we no longer do. Of the next eight papers, seven of them dealt also with endometrial dating. In 1991, a paper by Tom Stovall got a tremendous amount of notoriety. What he did was he took 40 women with known cancer. He did a PIPEL in the office the week before the hysterectomy. He managed to get cancer in 39 out of 40, hence he said it was 97.5% accurate. And since people were coming from DNCs and VABR aspirator, there was really a sea change to using this instrument to rule out cancer. And it really has been that way for the last maybe 20 or 25 years. I've been talking about the foibles of blind endometrial sampling since 1995. In that year, a study that was published in the Journal of Reproductive Medicine entitled PIPEL Sampling Sensitivity in the Detection of Endometrial Cancer, that paper demonstrated that endometrial biopsy had a very high overall accuracy in diagnosing endometrial cancer when an adequate specimen was obtained and when the endometrial process was in fact global. However, when the cancer occupied less than 50% of the surface area in the endometrial cavity, the cancer could be missed by such a blind endometrial biopsy. And I was very gratified finally in 2012, in July that year, when the ACOG practice bulletin number 128, known as Diagnosis of Abnormal Uterine Bleeding in Reproductive Age Women, which, by the way, was reaffirmed in 2014, stated that the primary imaging test of the uterus for the evaluation of abnormal uterine bleeding is transvaginal ultrasound, and then went on to talk about how if transvaginal ultrasound images were not adequate or further evaluation of the cavity became necessary, then sonohysterography, or what we've been calling saline infusion sonohysterography, or hysteroscopy, preferably in an office setting, was recommended. It did go on to say that an office endometrial biopsy can still be the first-line procedure of tissue sampling in the evaluation of these patients with abnormal bleeding, but it did reference the fact that the literature shows that the cancer occupies less than 50% of the surface area. It can be missed by a blind endometrial sample biopsy. And so the ACOG bulletin tells us, quote, these tests, meaning a blind biopsy, are only an endpoint when they reveal cancer or atypical hyperplasia, end of quote. Now, that's a huge change in the standard of care, and I worry about what percent of practicing OBGYNs are aware of that. So now that the standard of care corroborates that a negative blind biopsy is not a stopping point, certainly clinicians can still begin with a biopsy, but unless it's malignant or complex atypical hyperplasia, the endometrial evaluation
If you are just tuning in, you're listening to ReachMD. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Singer, and I'm speaking with Dr. Stephen Goldstein, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at New York University School of Medicine. Dr. Goldstein, the technology that you've mentioned, this new form of office hysteroscopy, sounds like a breakthrough in abnormal uterine bleeding diagnosis. Please share with our listeners how you have used this in your practice.
Certainly, this kind of technology that EndoC provides is something I've looked forward to for a long time. It easily gives us direct visualization of the uterine cavity. It can and should be performed in an office exam room at the time of the point of care.
And studies have shown that diagnostic hysteroscopy is more accurate than saline infusion sonohysterography or transvaginal ultrasound in assessing endometrial pathology. Diseases of the endometrium, such as hyperplasia and cancer, really can't be distinguished by SIS or transvaginal ultrasound alone.
The product consists of a disposable cannula that actually contains the camera, thus avoiding the necessity of cleaning or sterilizing, and it's got a handpiece with a small LCD screen. After I clean the cervix with a betadine-type solution, I will then stabilize the cervix with a cervical stabilizer. I never, ever use a single-tooth tenaculum. Cervical stabilizer is like a wispy little tenaculum that just holds the cervix in place, not for dilatation, but so that it doesn't move. I then insert this cannula, much like I would a pipette. And you put the IV tubing from an IV bag on a pole, and I utilize a pressure cuff around the IV bag. And then I use that little plastic thumb wheel, which I've moved close to my source, to control the amount of pressure and thus the flow of fluid. This entire visualization procedure takes a maximum of maybe 90 seconds to get total and adequate visualization. If there's no pathology, the patient can be treated expectantly or hormonally for her dysfunctional anovulatory bleeding. And then if there is focal pathology, polyps or myoma, focal thickening of tissue, I'll then schedule her for operative hysteroscopy with anesthesia in our outpatient setting.
What, if any, pitfalls about this technology would you like to share with your colleagues?
In patients who are cycling, timing of the procedure is paramount, but this is just the same as it is with sonohysterography. The procedure should be done just as a bleeding cycle ends to avoid those topographic irregularities that can occur. We've referred to these as endometrial moguls. Understand, the uterus is a battle-worn organ. Women have had babies, C-sections, myomectomies, D&Cs. And so as tissue is laid down, it is not always topographically homogeneous. And so these irregularities to the surface that we call moguls can often be mistaken for polyps or focal pathology. So timing is crucial. In addition, when you insert the cannula, you need to be careful because you can create a tunnel-like effect that's not dissimilar to when you put a pipette in to the endometrial cavity when there's abundant tissue. Patient selection is paramount. This is true in any invasive procedure. You know, some nulliparas are not going to be suitable candidates. You've got to judge the size of the cervical os. On occasion, I've used small dilators or one of these disposable graduated os finders. But this is going to depend on patient comfort and motivation for the patient to do it in an office setting now, as opposed to having to reschedule or going to the operating room and having pre-surgical testing for anesthesia. If I am going to reschedule for another time, sometimes I will utilize Cytotec or mesoprostol to soften the cervix.
Well, this is very practical and useful information for our listeners. Do you have any final thoughts or pearls for the audience?
When I think about what's really important to take away, Endo-C can give us point-of-care direct visualization of the endometrial cavity. As I've said already, though, patient selection is mandatory for success. This has become a very nice tool in my toolbox. And I think people need to understand that just as not all uteri lend themselves to a meaningful ultrasound examination, adenomyosis, coexisting fibroids, the axial uterus, not the retroverted uterus, patients with previous surgery, marked obesity, these women do not lend themselves to meaningful ultrasounds, and so the Endo-C has enabled me after 25 years to be able to directly visualize the endometrial cavity in a point-of-care fashion, that is, with the patient in the exam room at the time of my exam. And I think this is extremely advantageous in terms of my time, in terms of her time. And this translates both directly and indirectly to better and more cost-effective medical care, and also really conforms to a new, better standard of care than simply old blind endometrial biopsy by itself, which is no longer acceptable unless it's positive for cancer or endometrial hyperplasia.
Dr. Goldstein, many thanks for being with us today and sharing your insights on how clinicians can change the standard of care for the diagnosis of abnormal uterine bleeding.
Oh, well, thank you, Andrea, for allowing me to help spread the word to our fellow physicians.
I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Singer. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to this week's Medical Industry Feature, sponsored by Cooper Surgical, the comprehensive source for women's health care. To learn more about Endo-C and the diagnosis of AUB, please visit www.coopersurgical.com. And to download this segment and others in the series, please visit reachmd.com/AUB. That's reachmd.com/AUB. Thank you for listening.